Cookie Koyman joins us from Denker Capital. Cookie, lovely to have you. And a big story about Sasfin, which we'll talk about in a moment. But you're you know Sean well. You guys, did you ever work together?
Yep. No, we were at Old Mutual together. All those, was it 18, nine? No, he joined later, but I was there 89 from there onwards. And Sean joined after a few years. He was one of the younger recruits then.
At Old Mutual?
At Old Mutual, yeah.
Mm. And he's done well by, I think he went to Alan Gray and then off to worked with Simon Marais and started his own firm like you did, the same kind of path.
Yep.
And Denker Capital has retained a very, very high reputation, and particularly due to your exploits in the financial services industry. But right from those years, Corky, going back to the Old Mutual days, Sasfin was around. It was a bank that is well known. David Shapiro, who's often on the BizNews platforms, actually works for them. But my goodness, those results that finally came out yesterday, long after they should have, tell us they're going to delist. They're having all kinds of trouble. It's a story that I think you best can tell.
Yeah, no, it's a sad story. I've known Sasfin for many, many years. Even when I was at Old Mutual, they were actually pioneering quite a few things. And you'll recall their focus was leasing, office equipment leasing, and had a small office there I think it was Rosebank, and it grew from there. And but funding was always a problem for them. So, and that's when they did the Max Pollock Fremantle deal, when David Shapiro came aboard. And obviously then got a big client base, which at the moment, at that same stage, gave you funding. It was actually a pretty clever deal at that stage. But obviously the pressure's always when you a single product to grow into something wider. And I've gone back actually this morning and I tried to look at where did things start going wrong. And even in 2010, you can see they were having private equity problems and bad debts from private equity property-related transactions where they outsourced the private equity again. But the real problem really started coming in 2018-19. And a couple of things went wrong there. And, you know, they were caught in that massive fraud, the money laundering fraud, which also involved Gold Leaf Tobacco, where they actually infiltrated the business and various units of the business and got the head of IT and finance and credit control to conspire and work together. And, you know, even to the extent that cabal, if you want to call it, inside the business was able to erase transactions. And from there on, you can see it in the financial results. Suddenly in 2018, the non-performing loans, and I just wrote it down quickly, it's fascinating. In 2017, non-performing loans were 249 million, but 2019, it was 726. So it tripled the non-performing loans. So obviously, and I know I spoke to Michael Sassoon regularly at that stage as well. Obviously, he, at that stage, I'm not sure if they were aware of the fraud already, but you can see there were things going wrong. And so, long story, sadly, when you get to that position where your return on capital is under pressure, you're in the press for the wrong reasons, you start losing staff. And I think for that reason, they actually gave the wealth management guys more shares and took Sasfin itself as a listed entity out of the public eye, off the JSE. Well, that is still happening. But at the moment, this result now reflects the disposal, the starting and ongoing disposal of what would now be non-core. So the core will be going back to what they used to do, asset finance, specifically leasing, office leasing, and then also the wealth management and business and consumer banking.
So they'll just have those two kind of core businesses, the old Max Pollock for Fremantle, which David Shapiro is very involved in, and stockbroking, which couldn't have known what was going on, and then the office leasing equipment. But, Corky, what about the Al Jazeera expose of the gold smuggling from Zimbabwe?
Yep.
And then that was also laid at Sasfin's door. Is that the same scandal or fraud that you were talking about with Gold Leaf Tobacco?
Yes, yes. So it's still not been much in the public domain, interestingly enough. But I think, and obviously this was happening without them knowing it. And in fact, SARS actually alerted them to that, the Reserve Bank, in fact. When the Reserve Bank started noticing these flows in and out of the country because these guys were so good at hiding the transactions. And I think from there on, then you start focusing on the wrong things. Not on your core business. And at the moment they've got the tax case hanging over them where SARS is trying to claim, was it 4 billion, 5 billion, a huge amount for facilitating, not willfully, but facilitating the flow of foreign exchange out of the country, which meant SARS cannot collect from those parties. Now, that's going to be a very interesting case in any case, because can a bank be held accountable if a client takes money out of the country that might have been due to SARS? Sasfin was always a fairly conservative business, well run. But I think when you look back over those years, did desperately try to grow outside of whatever it was its core competencies and just never succeeded. And so you can see the cost to income ratio was always a bit too high as they were trying to go with new things. I made a list, but there's a lot of smaller steps that they tried to grow into and it never succeeded. But I think the core was really the bad debts that started hitting them in 2018-19, where obviously there were internal, the credit controls were not good enough.
I worked for a period for APSA. You'll remember this in the mid-90s. And we had a guy who worked for us called Bob Aldworth. I arrived there, he worked for APSA. Yes. And Bob had been previously the managing director of Barclays, which was the biggest and best bank at the time. He then left under a bit of a cloud, to put it mildly, from Barclays, after he had an affair with a lady called Sandra van der Merwe, who was a lecturer at Wits Business School. Then he was appointed by APSA, who didn't know the real story of Barclays. And shortly after I arrived at APSA, Aldworth had been fired because he was the head of credit and he had a company called Derwent Coal, which he'd lent money to, but he owned it himself and he'd written off the loan. Is this the same kind of thing that's happening here? When you get a dirty banker, in other words, lend myself money for one of my businesses, if it goes right, great. If it doesn't go right, we'll just write off the loan and no one will know about it.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I don't think we've got, because this was more a syndicate who were actually being controlled by outside parties and they were actually paid by those parties to facilitate transactions inside the bank to use it as a vehicle. So I think this was actually much bigger, but I think there are two stories here. You are right. The number one is the syndicate using the bank, but number two was just, it looks like there were bad lending transactions. I went back in my notes and you can see that a few times where credit controls were lacking and needed to be sharpened up. And so I think they just had the wrong people.
It's a bit worrying, though, that if a syndicate can infiltrate a bank like Sasfin, surely the appeal of a much bigger bank would be far greater. And here I'm talking about some of the big four. How do we know? You see these things and you can't fudge the figures. The figures have told you, as you've explained now, on what was going on at Sasfin. What do you look for from your side to perhaps give you an early warning signal of malfeasance? And perhaps not only you, but people inside these organizations, who must be trying to, there's fraud and criminals everywhere, and those have to be a very appealing target for them.
Yep. Yeah. Look, in most businesses, you look at the cash flow. And by the way, back to Steinhoff, that was one of the things that was always a warning signal. You know, there was the cash flow wasn't there. But in a bank, it's actually very difficult because you're continuously re-lending your cash flow out. So the main thing we look at is the underwriting, the quality of the underwriting, and that you normally see by the bad debt ratios going up. So initially, there are more provisions being taken than actual write-offs. But even that can, for a while, be hidden. You'll recall the short sellers who wrote that report against Capitec. They alleged that Capitec were evergreening their loans. Now, evergreening means that, you know, when I can't pay my loan, the bank just comes to me and says, okay, we'll give you a bigger facility or we'll extend your loan period. So that type of thing can be done. It is very dangerous for a bank. But when you start getting in, when you try to do that, and obviously the South African Reserve Bank, the Prudential Authority is very important. They are doing regular investigations on the banks, but as an analyst, the only thing we can do is keep on looking at the ratios. And the ratios normally do give you a warning unless the problem has been hidden for a while, which, you know, then you've got a problem with the integrity of the management, which obviously we do a lot of visits and to try and over time test management. And you don't only visit, let's say, Sasfin, as a team, we try and visit all the banks. In fact, November, again, we've got our regular roadshow where in November we've seen the CEOs and the CFOs of almost, I think, every bank and insurer in South Africa. And then you corroborate the stories. And it's often, we see that overseas as well. Bank A will tell you, well, you know, you should worry about Bank B. So, what is that? And yeah, so it's just a mosaic theory of getting as much information as you can to try and pick up something that might be wrong. And when you do then notice that, then you zoom in on that. But hopefully those type of issues, as Sasfin has had, is few and far between, but it does happen. It does happen. And when I look back in 2017, it was really noticeable in the results that things were starting to deteriorate.
What scares me witless as a South African taxpayer is this urging of some people in the public sector to create a state bank. Because if you can do this with a private sector bank, which is family controlled, but the Sassoon family have been involved there forever, and they couldn't pick it up. Can you imagine that a state organization, and especially as the track record that we've seen in South African state organizations, what could happen there? It's a very complex area, and one where if the criminal syndicates can infiltrate Sasfin, they should be able to infiltrate much more easily a company that's perhaps doesn't have the incentives that the Sassoons would have had.
No, absolutely. I mean, you see that with the Post Bank, very good example, but that is just internal incompetency. You see it with, VBS, that is actually, actually effectively it was a syndicate who used the bank to enrich themselves. You see it with the, I forget the name now of the bank in KwaZulu-Natal, which is involved in the school feeding schemes. That's right, Itala, and remember, those amounts are fairly small, but once you get a state-owned bank who not only wants to go into consumer lending, but more into corporate loans where you can really have big frauds. But the state-owned bank is just, especially at the moment in South Africa, where we just don't seem to be able to get competent people or don't want to appoint competent people into the right positions. You know, you really, for the taxpayers, it'd be the worst thing we could do to start a state-owned bank.
So I'm right to be scared witless about that.
Yep. Corky Kooyman. No, you're totally right.
Corky Kooyman is with Denker Capital. Thank you, Corky, for taking us through the sad Sasfin story, and the numbers that Sasfin delivered yesterday, pretty irrelevant, as he says, because they will be delisting this business from the JSE in the near future.